Well, hey everyone, welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Very excited to announce that later on in the show, we will have our inbox per usual. And this time we're going to actually be addressing the question, should I step back from a gay friend? Then for our culture segment, we're going to be talking to Jeff Mannion, who's the author of The Land Between, Finding God in Difficult Transitions. Who of us has not been through one of those? So great insight there. Speaking of transitions, here we are for our roundtable. Very pleased to have Susie, Rob, and Anthony here. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Good to see you.
Hi.
Great to have you. And we're going to talk about friendships, specifically friendships that are transitory because of like life stage changes or moves. Or, you know, I think in an ideal world, we would just have all these lifelong friends and we would just live in a commune and be in everyone's lives. Actually, I think Anthony does do that. So we can maybe share from his experience. But no, the fact is people move away, people get married, people just ditch us, people go on the fade. There are all kinds of things that play into this, and some of us fret about it more than others. So we're going to break it down and have a little conversation about this today. So let's go ahead and get started. I'm going to start out by asking, first of all, just, you know, lately I've been in the habit of asking numbers-based questions, polls. Sorry, ladies, from a couple weeks ago. So here's my question. Of your top five friendships that you have right now, how many of them are local, would you say? You live in the same town.
That's difficult.
I think I would say zero.
Okay. Yeah. Now, would you say you have like five? I mean, if you had to say you had five friends, do you have five close-ish friends?
Yeah.
You do? Okay. But
I've moved around quite a bit. And okay. So I've made those friends, you know, in different places, at different times in my life. And I did grow up here, but most of my good friends that were here have moved away.
Okay.
So.
And then you're recently returned here,
yes,
right? So
yeah.
You kind of have that little conundrum.
Right.
Okay. So, So zero. What about you, Rob?
Well, I also recently moved here. Well, about 4 months ago. I'd say maybe two out of five are local.
Okay.
At this point.
Now, are those two that you made in 4 months? Or you?
Well, one is my brother.
Oh, okay. I guess we can count him.
And the other, I mean, I'm having a hard time defining it because my friends from Tucson where I moved, there are friendships that were over the course of 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I don't know if it's necessarily a matter of best or not best friends. It's kind of like a whole different thing, I guess.
Yeah. Okay.
Three of mine are local.
Okay. Well, that's pretty good. Yeah. Now, are they in your lives like weekly at least, or more than weekly? Okay.
About weekly, yeah.
Okay. So you're in touch with them. Okay. So now let's just talk generally. I would say of my closest five friends, I would actually say if I don't count siblings, all of mine are local, but I've lived here for a long time now, longish time. Let's talk about the type of friendships you do. Are you more of a seasonal friendship person? Like you've got your friends from college, you have your friends from where you first lived, your childhood friends, you have your friends from whatever, you know, group, hiking club you're in or whatever. Or do you carry friends over from season to season? Like you have lifelong friends that have spanned time and all that kind of stuff.
I'd say I definitely like to invest in where I'm at. Mm-hmm. So proximity is a huge thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
But it does seem that every season of my life, there's one or two people that I would definitely like to maintain contact with.
Mm-hmm.
For example, one of my best friends, we've been friends since first grade.
Hmm.
And so we've lived in different states. We've lived, you know, hours and miles apart. But now we're both in Colorado, so actually we just connected. So.
Yeah, that's good. That's great. Awesome.
Yeah, I think there are definitely some friends from all of the different times in my life that I've carried, you know, carried through those relationships. And one of my best friends is from high school, so I'm still close with her, even though she lives in Germany now. So it's really important to have those relationships, you know, they know you through different stages and to keep in touch with them. But it is hard to maintain sometimes just because, you know, life gets in the way. But I definitely still have those friends who I'm glad that we can still stay connected.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I'd say for me, the answer is both, really. I have kind of seasonal friends as well as the ones that I pursue more frequently. And the seasonal ones, I mean, based off of like college or whatever else, it's not like they were only friends for that period of time. But like only when I'm back in that neighborhood or back in that area or whatever, do I kind of reconnect with them. Mm-hmm. So there's no expectation to kind of every week or month or whatever stay in touch, but there's still like a very solid foundation of a friendship there that picks up very naturally whenever we're able to reconnect. Mm-hmm. And then I have people from, you know, all stages of life that I still pursue pretty intentionally.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I would say for me too, it's very much, I definitely have friends that were for certain seasons. I think I've only been probably really understood friendship in the last 10 years, probably, as far as like really being intentional about friendship and even being transparent in friendship, accountable in friendship. I used to be kind of like, I was very much, this is like two confessions. I was certainly the person that was like, you know, be a friend to this person for a certain amount of time, but then if they start bugging me too much, then it's time to just move on to the next person who doesn't bug me. So to actually work through friendship stuff and kind of be a friend, walk through hard things with people, I would say is a recent phenomenon for me. And probably in the last 5 to 6 years have I really invested, I think, in friendships much more so. So let's talk about, Anthony, you kind of alluded to this, that crossing over of seasons and geography and all that kind of stuff. How, for those friendships that you've carried over, how often do you guys stay in touch and to what level? And do you feel you're a good friend in those situations? Or do you feel like you're only a good friend to certain? I mean, you can't be friend, like you said, you can't be best friends with every single person you've ever touched in your lifetime, because that would just be ridiculous. But how do you kind of span those longer distance ones?
Well, for me, I mean, having Facebook is sometimes annoying, but it's a really great way to stay connected and just to be able to keep in touch, because it is hard, you know, when you live in different time zones and have different work schedules. And, you know, a lot of my friends are married with kids, and so it's hard to be able to connect like on the phone very frequently. But through, you know, other means of communication, we can still keep in touch with each other and know what's going on in each other's lives. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's really important to be able to maintain those. And so it's not like every, you know, 6 months you pick up the phone and you have to rebuild that whole relationship. You can kind of still follow along and, you know, when you're able to touch base, you know, over the phone or whatever it is, it's a little bit easier to maintain that.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say for me, it's not that often actually that I make contact with people that are living, you know, in other states. I guess I have a different expectation for those relationships. So I don't view it as, oh, am I being a good friend or a bad friend? It's more like my expectation changes. And so, you know, I do stay in touch. I do connect, but it might be once a month, or it might be, you know, a text message randomly because I'm eating lunch and I think of something funny. But for me, that just feels normal and that feels right. I've never been the type of person who wants to talk every single day to someone that isn't into my day-to-day life.
Yeah. So now, but do you ever find that there are people that disagree with you on that, like friends, where they're like, why are you only talking to me once a month? Like, I want to talk to you more often.
I have never had a huge issue, but I know that there are people that just have a different perspective. And so even moving out to Colorado, I sat down with a good friend and I said, hey, just so you know, this is kind of how I view things going forward, because I had an impression that his view might be a little bit different. So I just kind of put it on the table and said, hey, you know, I'm not used to calling a lot.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is, I think I've reached out more than than that person has.
Okay.
So,
well, that's good. I mean, that was a good, you know, I think that's good to have forethought into that.
That's the best, just being intentional and setting intentions well and communicating clearly. That's the best way to avoid hurt feelings and all that drama.
Yeah. I think too, you know, especially for my friends that have, specifically the ones that have married and moved away and now have kids and stuff like that. I mean, I know that they have other responsibilities in their life. I mean, they're in MOPS groups and they're doing all kinds of stuff. And so it's fun to see, though, that my friends that were great friends in the past, in fact, one of them I just went out and visited last summer and saw her in her glory with all of her kids. And I'm just like, ah, how do you do it? But it was like, it was that phenomenon of being able to pick up where you left off. Mm-hmm. And it was fun. And there was no hard feelings on either side of the fact that I have this life over here and she's living that life. And it was just like, the time we have together is so great. Mm-hmm. And so that was really cool. But that does bring me to my question. And Susie, you brought up social media. Do you guys feel that having access, I know Christianity Today just did an article where the author talked about how because we have access to so many means of social media and we can tweet something to someone or text them or we can post on their Facebook page or quite frankly just stalk them on their Facebook page and learn all about their life without even talking to them, does that keep us, are we holding on to past relationships rather than really investing in the people that are here and now because we're using the benefits of these past connections? And, you know, because I think the author was describing in the article going to church, and you may go to church regularly, you may even be in a small group, but you may not willingly share at a certain level because you know that you have your, you know, childhood friends or your siblings or other people that you're going to go to for that. And so it's kind of hampering new relationships. Have you guys felt that at all or felt it from other people?
I've never experienced that. It makes sense that some people would have that problem, but I don't think it's necessarily a question of whether or not, it's not necessarily a question of the goodness or badness of social media, but just how different people prioritize their lives. So, I mean, mm-hmm. yeah, wherever you are, obviously you need to be doing life with the people that you're around. But yeah, so for some people it might be a stumbling block because, you know, it allows them to have this surface level relationship with whomever while avoiding real intimacy with the people there that God's put around them. And then for some people it's just a great tool because it helps you keep lines open with people that you care about, not to the detriment of your in-person relationships. Mm-hmm. So it's naive to think that social media doesn't have some influence on things, mm-hmm. But I tend to be more social media agnostic in that it's kind of, in my opinion, more of a blank slate, and how healthy it is depends on how you use it.
Mm-hmm. Good thought.
I feel like there's a certain pressure that comes with social media. Mm-hmm. I mean, kind of in the background, it's like you're going along through your life and you have this net and you're just picking up everybody. Mm-hmm. And like, it seems like kind of traditionally, the normal path is you have seasons and you move on from those seasons, and naturally you'd kind of move on from those relationships. But social media, you just carry it all with you. You know, that net just keeps gathering more and more, mm-hmm. more people. And what I found moving here, because moving here for me signified a lot more than just a move. It signified a transition in my life, mm-hmm. a completely new season. And it's not like I loved the people any less that I knew before, but I want to embrace what's next. Mm-hmm. And kind of what I've been noticing is that the community I was in Arizona was awesome. Like, mm-hmm. it changed my life in so many good ways. But it also really helped define and give me boundaries. And now I'm kind of excited for the opportunity of kind of embracing this new season where I have new relationships. And so it's kind of interesting, mm-hmm. to carry everybody into that.
Sure.
And what does that look like? And I found myself kind of pulling away from some of the social network stuff, just mm-hmm. kind of giving myself space, even if it's unintentionally, just giving myself space to be who I am here, mm-hmm. and not trying to maintain everything that I was. Mm-hmm.
But prior. Do you ever feel, Rob, like any kind of sadness about if you look at the span of your life and think, is there really anyone that has known me in all of these seasons? Like, to, you know, I think a lot of people look to marriage for that. Like, now there's going to be this person with me that's going to walk with me through all these phases. And if I look back on my life, the only person I have really is my mom, who's really known me through all these seasons, even though she hasn't lived with me in the same place all those, but she's followed my life and stuff. And everyone else is like, they knew me in high school, they knew me in college, they know me from Focus, they know me from Facebook, they know, you know, and you're kind of like, does everyone just know a little piece mm-hmm. of you? I don't know. Do you guys wrestle mm-hmm. with that? I mean, Susie and Rob and I are the singletons here.
Sure. You want to?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely can feel that sometimes. It's, you want people who know you really well and know you through all these different times, and so it's easy to kind of, to try to maintain that, even though it might not, you know, it might be something that you should let go of. Mm-hmm. It might be somebody that you shouldn't, you know, you don't need to continue that relationship. But you were a certain person with them, and so you want them to know you through all those stages. And mm-hmm. And it can be hard not having that and kind of being able to let go of that, I mm-hmm. think.
Mm. Yeah.
It's interesting because, you know, on one hand, it's true, yeah, traditionally we didn't, you know, have this dragnet of relationships where, like, wherever we went, we could always keep them with us. But also, traditionally, we didn't move as much. We mm-hmm. stayed in one place.
Yeah, that's true.
So, like, this value of let go of whatever and always just focus on relationships where you're at is only reflective of new, of very, very, very new changes in how we and how we do life. Mm-hmm. So back in the day, we mostly stayed in like one town or one area, and now we fly and bounce back all over the place. Mm-hmm. And so again, I think that it could be both positive and negative. There's value to like being focused on wherever God has you, but there's also, I mean, this human need to have some sort of continuity in long-term relationships. Yeah. And social media can help or hinder that depending upon how you use it, I think.
Well, I think too, we were also in the past much more involved in one another's lives, like in the day-to-day. You know, mm-hmm. we helped one another build barns and give birth to children and stuff, and now you hire contractors and you go to the hospital, you know, and everyone mm-hmm. else just sends a card and flowers and stuff like that. So I think that is kind of a weird, you know, again, a little sadness mm-hmm. associated with that. So in light of this, kind of as we wrap here, this time always goes so quickly, people. I just feel like I need to friend all of you on Facebook to continue this. Now I'm gonna jump into Rob's net and just drag him down.
No one's gonna want to be my
I'm gonna drag him down. But what do you hope to do in 2015? Or maybe it doesn't have to be this coming year, but as you look ahead in the short term in your life, what do you want to do or what do you want to see in improving your giving and receiving of friendship?
Well, I started this process last year with my wife, and I actually mentioned it at the Pursuit Conference roundtable, but I was influenced by this article called Concentric Circles of Relationship by Ben Pasley. You can find it online in blog post. And so we actually, it's been like a very long process and one that we come back to, but just recently we kind of came back to approaching all of our relationships, and we actually, it sounds pretty nerdy, but we actually diagrammed these relationships out and kind of have, like, you know, our core, our most inner circle is just our family, like immediate, and then outside of that we have kind of an inner circle and sort of different circles defined by whatever qualities we choose. Mm-hmm. And so my goal really is to, like, just be way more intentional about relationships and make sure that I really, like, on a weekly basis, those people that I consider kind of my inner circle, whatever, like, really pursue them and look for ways to, like, help them or bless them or encourage them versus mm-hmm. always just kind of, like, looking for what I need. Yeah, and then likewise with the more removed circles of people, like, looking for what's an intentional way to approach all those people. So I feel like, because, you know, as time goes on, whether it be via social media or just lots and lots of networking or meeting people and so on, it's easy to kind of feel, for me, kind of disorganized with my relationships. Mm-hmm. And hopefully in like a very human and helpful way, I think diagramming this out and praying about it and thinking about people in that way can help improve the quality of those relationships.
Mm-hmm. For me, I think I haven't been very good at, like, carving out specific times to make those relationships stronger, the ones that I have to, you know, reach out for and call because they don't live here, or people I know here in town who, you know, I'm still building those relationships. I think I just need to work on making, you know, being intentional with that and making time for them and not just kind of letting it happen, you know, whenever it happens, if we call each other mm-hmm. once a month or whatever. I think I need to set aside specific times just to make sure I can work on those relationships and get them stronger and give more of myself to those.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
If I had a goal, I guess it would probably be to enjoy the friendships that I have, to really step into that more.
Mm-hmm.
I think over the last, you know, most of my 20s, I've learned a lot about what friendship is because I didn't really know anything. And I've gone through a lot of, you know, a lot of the intentional thinking things through and really working on relationships. And I'm kind of realizing now the part that's missing is I just need to really step into enjoying some of those and really appreciating them. So
that's cool. Yeah, I think I see mine as being, to Anthony's circle point, I've got my really tight circle of friends, the small, small concentric circle there. And then after that, it's a huge net circle of random people. So I need to build a few more circles in that include like probably a stronger mentor relationship and mentee relationship with a couple people I've wanted to pursue, but kind of it's very hit and miss. And then others that I have through a small group and others, and it's, yeah. It's like, let me catch you on the flip side. Or it's the horrible, you know, once every 6 month coffee dates where you're just like catching up on your whole life because you haven't done well with that. So could definitely improve there. But thanks, you guys, so much for weighing in on this. Good stuff.
Thanks. Those are the battle rages. We will stand in the fight. And though the armies rise up against us on all sides, we will not be shaken.
Here we are for this week's culture segment. It's always fun when we can introduce you to a new person here at The Boundless Show. We generally do that through our culture segment because we always enjoy seeing the different topics that we can bring up here at The Boundless Show. Today, we are talking to Jeff Mannion. Hey, Jeff.
Good to see you, Lisa.
Great for you to be here. Jeff is senior teaching pastor of Ada Bible Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan, where he has been basically forever by pastor terms, over 30 years.
32 years.
32 years. And you actually reflect in the book on starting, what was it, like in a double garage or something? It was some weirdo
situation.
Yeah,
it was a house that they would later turn, church building that they would later turn into a house, but it was your basic ranch house, and worship space was the width of a two-stall garage.
Yeah.
25 people, and Chris and I were just married and 21 years old, and the church is without a pastor, and they invited us to come in, and they asked me to preach until they found a real pastor.
Wow.
And they're still looking.
And isn't it true? Well, you know, you need to not look in winter because up in Michigan, no one wants to go there. So
that's right.
You need to only do pastor searches in the middle of summer because then it's pretty.
Absolutely.
But so the question is, isn't that like a very small percentage of pastors that actually start with their first church and stick with it that long?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know the numbers, but it's pretty rare.
You don't sit around doing research on that.
Yeah, it's pretty rare.
You're more concentrated on actually preaching and like leading the church. That's good.
But it's not the same church. It's
no.
It's probably changed, you know, three or four times, you know, not only buildings, but as you change size, 50 is nothing like 500, and 500 is different than, you know, multi-campus. And so
very true. Yeah, you've actually moved to kind of multi-site at this point. I know, what, like three different sites?
Three campuses,
okay. All right. Well, when Jeff is not preaching and teaching and speaking and all that, he's also an author, and he has written the book, The Land Between, Finding God in Difficult Transitions, which is what we're going to talk about today because, hello, I know some of you just pulled out a pencil because this is very applicable to us who are young adults going through transition and in any number of areas of our lives. So you actually kick off the book, Jeff, telling the story of losing your mom at a very young age in a car accident.
Yep.
And so talk about, you know, kicking off life with a major life transition. And And I think, you know, life transitions can be good too, but I think largely, you know, examples that we use, and the book itself actually tracks the Israelites through their wilderness experience coming out of Egypt, and that's what you use kind of as the basis of telling this. But can you start off by telling us, you know, that was kind of your first land between, so to speak. Describe how that prepared you for any future life interruptions. Because no kid is just sitting there going, well, you know, thank the Lord that I'm really going to learn through this and be able to mature in this.
It was my seventh grade year. My dad was a pastor, five children. My sister was 13. I was 12. Younger brothers, 9, 4, and 2-month-old baby that lived through the accident that killed my mom. But basically, you awaken one morning to the news, you know, there's been an accident, and everything in life changes. And there was a cross-country move from Idaho, where my dad pastored, to Michigan. And my dad married a much younger woman. She was 21 at the time. Carolyn's one of the most gracious people you would ever meet, but she had to adjust to becoming a mom of five children. And so Grand Rapids, Michigan for 2 years, and then moved to Northern California. And so you go from this stable situation of, you know, grade school, everything being the same in this small potato country, southeast Idaho. And then one funeral, one wedding, and two cross-country moves later, everything's tipped upside down and changed. And yet, I think that that disruption that God was preparing my heart as a young 21-year-old pastor, just to be able to shepherd, pastor, and coach people who have situations thrust upon them that they did not desire and did not ask for. You know, you think the relationship is moving toward engagement and you're sitting down to dinner one evening and he's nervous and you think he's going to ask me. And then he says, what would you think if we dated other people? Which means he already has, you know. And suddenly you move from this pre-engagement to you know, single once again without the relationship that you had, graduated from college, not being able to find a career that matches, you know, your field of study that you've invested in for 4, 5, or 6 years, or a company upheaval where you just get called into an office one day and it's like, we're restructuring, your position no longer exists. And so, Lisa, I've just spent an incredible amount of time asking the question, what does God plan for us during these awful times when we go, I don't like this space, I don't want this space, I don't understand this space, and how God might be pleased to use what, you know, what I call the land between.
Yeah. Well, and Jeff, talk to us a little bit. I mean, I think if we all had the opportunity, and young adults fall into this trap too, we would love to just sit down and create a business plan for our life and chart out our 10-year, 20-year success plan, make everything happen, mitigate all the risk and all the loss. But the fact is that the Bible tells us that we will experience hardship. So why in the world are we always, as believers, even those who consider themselves somewhat mature believers, why are we always surprised by the bumps in the road? Why do we always, whether it's cancer or loss of a family member or a job, you know, loss or financial hardship, we're always like, what? What's God doing? Why? You know, it reminds me of the Israelites, actually.
Yeah. I think that if someone's raised in Sunday school, I think that our teachers unintentionally set us up for a fall in repeating the stories of David and Goliath, Daniel in the lion's den, the Israelites at the Red Sea. And the lesson of the story always seemed to be the same. When you're in trouble, trust God and he will get you out.
Yeah. Well, everyone in those flannel graphs looks happy.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Yeah. And the truth of the matter is, you know, read scripture as it presents itself. And you have, you know, the Israelites for 40 years in the desert, a space that they do not want to be in. The Apostle Paul, beaten up more than a few times. John the Baptist gets beheaded. The Bible from cover to cover is a journey of trust where it's not going well much of the time. And God is saying, listen, I want you to trust me in the middle of this mess. I think that that is not something that's necessarily taught in our younger years. And quite frankly, when someone comes to a major life crisis, many people abandon their faith. They go, this isn't working like it's supposed to work. And yet I think a true reading of scripture allows you, it really is.
Yeah. You know? Well, and ironically, a lot of Christians seem to, when they encounter hardship or even a smaller bump in the road, many of us choose to turn from like you said, we choose to turn from God, or we think God doesn't care, or we think that we need to go solve some things off on the side on our own. But you actually have a section of the book where you talk about the value of talking to God in these situations.
Yeah.
Using, I mean, the Psalms being a great example and what David did. What is a good way, if you were to counsel a young adult, Jeff, in this, what's a good way to talk to God when we're frustrated? What's a productive way? Or non-productive. I mean, maybe we start out non-productive.
Well, I think non-productive is to remain silent and to say nothing and to stew. But the Psalms of Lament, and I do talk about several of those in the book, you see King David more than willing to just open his heart and say, this is not working. Mm-hmm. Psalm 55, oh, that I had the wings of a dove, I would fly away. I would just get out of here. Psalm 69 is the song of a drowning man. The water's up to my neck. I'm slipping. He says, I am hoarse, crying out for help. And this is like a guy going under, scanning shore for a lifeguard, and there is nobody there. And then the psalm just where he says, how long, O Lord, will you reject me forever? How long will my enemy triumph over me? How long will I wrestle with my thoughts? It's asked four times in two verses. And the prayer is basically, how come I keep praying and how come you keep not doing anything? And so there was this brutal honesty in the Psalms of Lament. And yet, at least it's not a hit and run. It's not a drive-by at God. These Psalms, like Psalm 13 and Psalm 55 and Psalm 69, they end with hope. And it's like, yet I will trust in you, yet I will wait. Psalm 69 ends, do not let me drown. And so it's the ability to face God. It's the ability to pour out what is actually happening in all its brutal ugliness. Maybe asking him why he's not present when you think he's supposed to be. But then instead of turning your back and walking away, remaining there with your hands open. I think we empty our hands in this lament, and I think we keep our hands open to receive what he would be pleased to speak back into our lives. But I believe it's healthy. And these people that did this, I mean, Moses, where he says, if this is how you're going to treat me, just kill me. And he says, I can't carry this anymore. Jeremiah had a famous meltdown. I think it's in Jeremiah 20 or 21. Elijah asked just to die. These are not spiritual lightweights. These are some of the heroes of the faith who just reached points of fatigue where, honest to God, they said, I can't do this, and I don't feel like you're keeping your end of the bargain. And often God met them in that naked, vulnerable space.
And it seems too, you know, this is just from conversations with my friends and people I know through church and stuff, that God isn't necessarily the way we would see it, quote unquote, fair in the way he meets out life circumstances. So as you have counseled folks over the years, how do you sit down with a person who is just constantly slammed, who has lost things, who has been, I mean, there are people going through death, abuse, I mean, things, repeated things, and then they look at their fellow church members who seem to be coasting through. What is your encouragement for that person who just feels like, God, you know, when are you going to let up?
And by the way, it's a comparison, isn't it, that kills?
Oh, sure.
It's wrestling with infertility for 3 years, and then someone in your Sunday school class or small group, they're pregnant again.
Yeah, I could sit in the pew of my church and think of 10 things that the people in that same pew have better than me, you know? I mean, I could spend the whole announcement time stewing over that, so.
Well, I would say be slow to speak. When someone's going through something just incredibly tragic, the unfaithfulness of a spouse, an engagement that breaks up close to the wedding, a miscarriage after a long-awaited pregnancy, often that person needs love. They need mercy. They also need to be reminded that God is faithful. And as dark as it is, they just need someone to speak words of hope. There will come a day when you will laugh again. I know you don't see it. I know it's not going to be tomorrow. They need people to be hopeful for them. And I think a consistent, faithful person in their life to listen, not to coddle, but to encourage, and to remind them of God's faithfulness over time is powerful. But as the listener, as the coach, we can't expect these things to turn on a dime. Mm-hmm. I mean, grief, there's no such thing as a drive-through window for grief, you mm-hmm. know, where you pay your dues and then travel on. Mm-hmm. Grief, you think you're over the worst of it, and then you get sideswiped one day when you think you see them in a mall or you see a car that looked like theirs, or mm-hmm. And it comes back. And so I think that consistency, faithfulness to a friend, mm-hmm. and also a reminder that God is good, I think these can be powerful things.
Yeah, that's good. I know when I, you know, years ago, I lost my dad to cancer and at the same time was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis, which mm-hmm. our audience knows. And I remember just looking around me. I mean, here I was in my late 20s and I was like, no one in my peer group had experienced that.
Yeah.
And so it was very helpful to me, one, to be in a church body that was multi-generational, that
yeah.
had, because I went to the old ladies because they had arthritis.
Wow.
And I went to the older people in our church had lost spouses and had lost. And so it was actually a great entree for me to really begin being invested in by some of the people in our church who,
you know, particularly, there's something so powerful there, particularly those who had been through a season of pain.
Mm-hmm.
There's that passage in 2 Corinthians where Paul says, praise be to the God of all, like the Father of all compassion, the God of all comfort. And then he says, who comforts us in all of our trials. But then he says, so that we may comfort others.
Mm-hmm.
with the very comfort we ourselves have received from God.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for someone passing through a very challenging time in their life, one of these land between undesired transition spaces, the ability to say, okay, if I become a person of trust during this time, it's not just me.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to encounter people through the years who have messes of all kinds. And if we find God faithful in this situation and we're faithful in our journey, God, please use this for us to be able to coach others and encourage others in theirs. So the fact that you'd be able to go, you know, to older, you know, to widows in your congregation mm-hmm. or older folks who were struggling with arthritis, and if they journey through that well,
mm-hmm.
not with a spirit of complaint, but with a spirit of trust, in a spirit of hope, the way that they grew through their pain helps you grow through yours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So let's kind of break it down here for the person. I'm just thinking of an example. Say I have a friend who, you know, because we talk a lot about relationships here
yeah.
at the Boundless Show. I have a friend who was interested in a guy for years, hung on to a relationship that ended up never
yeah.
coming to fruition.
Yeah.
She thought there was more to it than there was. So she grieved that
sure.
relationship for a long time. She knew she had to break it off because it was unhealthy.
Yeah.
So she did. And she'll tell me, she said, Lisa, I thought for sure that God was going to reward me
yep.
for doing that by giving me this great guy. And she's still single. What do you say, Jeff, you know, whether to my friend, these people that are in situations where we never seem to get out of the in-between. Maybe we have wrestled with singleness for 10, 15 years now. We're still single. Maybe we have been praying for an unsaved family member our entire life and we're not seeing an answer. I mean, it's easy for me, you know, say I too have been through breakups, people. And I can look back on them now and know that I came out of that season and there was joy and beauty from ashes and all this kind of stuff. But there are some people that are still in it and it's years and years and years. Is there, where is that light at the end of the tunnel?
Well, let me say something that's hard to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And in personal conversation, I mean, in interview format, I can say this to you. I don't think I would say it to someone who's just been broken up with.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'd be much more cautious and careful
sure.
and judicious with my words. But I think the question that we're always asking in the land between is, how can I get out of this space?
Mm-hmm.
Someone in 2010, the house that refused to sell, the 16th month of unemployment, the fifth year of infertility, the second relationship that broke up after 3 years of mm-hmm. dating, we're thinking, how can I get out of this space?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a natural question and it's a normal question. I think the more mature question over time is, what does God want to do with this space?
Mm-hmm.
And it's when we get past the why and we get into the what now.
Mm-hmm.
And with the Israelites in the wilderness, which is just a beautiful picture of being in this between space, because they've been in slavery for Egypt for generations and they're waiting to get into the promised land. And here they are stuck in the stinking desert, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet what they're in there, where they're really in trust school. And when they leave Egypt, you know, Moses, let my people go. You know, they follow him out into the desert. They are not ready to enter the land of promise as God's people. They exit Egypt. They exit Egypt as an unruly mob of ex-slaves indoctrinated in generations of Egyptian idol worship. They don't know the singular, invisible creator God, and they don't trust him. And so what's happening when they go without water for 3 days, when they're going without food, when the chariots are attacking them at the Red Sea, is God is saying, I want you to trust me. I want you to trust me when you're under attack. I want you to trust me when you run out of food. I want you to trust me when you're eating this manna stuff for the second year in a row. And I think one of the most powerful prayers that we can offer is just, God, I don't like this space. I don't want this space. I don't understand this space, but I will trust you in this space. Mm-hmm. And what I see so often, Lisa, is just that the soil that we despise grows the spiritual fruit that we most desperately need. Mm-hmm. And it can become a greenhouse for spiritual growth, but that doesn't make it any more enjoyable to live through. Mm-hmm. It's awful space, but God can do some wonderful things in it.
Hmm. So true. Well, Jeff, this has been fantastic. Again, folks, the book is The Land Between, Finding God in Difficult Transitions. I know you are out there because you write to us. Those of you who are still waiting on a job, you are still waiting on a relationship, on marriage, you're waiting for a broken relationship with your parents to be healed, grab a copy of this book. If you know someone who's walking through a hard transition, grab this for them. And do join us in the conversation over on the blog. Share your story. I know it will encourage others. So, Jeff, thanks so much for being here.
Lisa, great to talk today.
Your love is devoted like a ring of solid gold, like a vow that is tested, like a covenant of old. And your love is enduring through the winter rain and beyond the horizon with mercy. For today, faithful you have been, and faithful you will be. You pledge yourself to me, and it's why I sing your praise. Will ever be on my lips, ever be on my lips. Your praise will ever be on my lips, ever be on my lips. Your
We are opening up this week's inbox, and I have Deanna, one of our counselors here. Hey, Deanna.
Hi.
Great to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely, and thanks for being willing to tackle this question, which is sometimes a tricky one, especially in our culture and within the church. This listener is saying, my friend who isn't a Christian is gay and has feelings for me. I'm not gay and I'm a Christian. She told me that she's sorry if she confuses things between us. We become good friends, but now I'm wondering if I need to step back a bit from this friendship. The problem is we've gotten to be really close friends and she's one of my only friends. I thought about just ignoring it, but now I'm wondering if taking action might be a better plan. Do you have any advice for me?
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, when we look at relationships, I think if we look at the Bible and how Jesus had relationships, you know, all throughout the Bible, he shows examples of having relationships with sinners and how he interacted with them and different examples. But if you look at the people that Christ had in his close circle, those people were the disciples. And so those were the people that were in the same mind as him, and they were working towards growing closer to the Lord. And I think that it's important that we surround ourselves with friends that are on the same path that we are, so that, you know, those people are Christians and that they are also going in the same direction that we are as pursuing the Lord. But I think it's important to, you know, we're constantly surrounded by people that have different opinions about things than we do, and, you know, just helping them to live out a life of an example of Christ so that they would see that in us. It sounds like, you know, if the two of them are close friends, that they, you know, this would be a great opportunity for her to sort of share her faith with this person. And, you know, but I think it's important that the people that you consider your close friends and the people that you go to when you have difficulties or struggles are Christians that are going in the same direction that you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because I think she says, you know, I'm wondering if taking action might be a better plan. It makes me wonder if what her response was to her friend. Like, did she just say, well, you know, actually, I'm not gay, or did you, you know, I'm hoping she didn't leave the door open for her friend, you know, and she didn't confuse things. She said her friend's saying she's trying to not confuse things. So I think it would be helpful for this girl to be very clear about where she is in her faith, like you suggested, and relationally what that needs to look like. What for her would be your suggestion, Deanna, as far as drawing appropriate boundaries without pushing her friend away, while at the same time then trying to maybe build up some additional friendships that might be a little more life-giving for her?
Right. Well, like I said, I think it's important to set boundaries up front. And, you know, when she finds out that this other girl is attracted to her, to, you know, to discuss that she's not homosexual and that she is... you know, doesn't agree with that, and she could share why. And, you know, and I think just a good way to meet other Christian friends is just to surround yourself with those people. So if that is getting involved in a small group at church, or, you know, sometimes if you're in college and then you have opportunities to have other groups of people that meet together that are, you know, like-minded and that are looking for, you know, Christ to make their decisions.
Yeah. Well, good thoughts. Hopefully that'll set her on at least a good start for getting getting going. Thank you so much for writing in, I want to say, to this listener. And thanks, Deanna, for weighing in on this with some expertise and a good balanced approach to it. So we appreciate that.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
All right, folks, that is it for this week's show. Do contact us at editor@boundless.org and hop over on our blog and comment. Do be sharing the show with friends as well. You can also find us on radio, of course. You could tell people about that. Otherwise, we will see you around next week for our next show. Until then, I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org. Focus on the family.